Welcome to MyOccupy. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor with The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet.
And being the end of the year, we've got a slightly different show for you this time. We'll be looking back at the list of hits, misses, and fence straddlers that were Microsoft's last 12 months. Was this a turnaround year for Microsoft, as some people are starting to say, or was this just another turnaround year that follows previous other turnaround years? We'll be getting into some of that. Kicking off, I think, Mary Jo, you've got a list of your list of hits, misses, and also your fence sitters. What have you got on your list? What do you think of what do you think Microsoft did well this year? Where do you think it went wrong this year? And where do you think it's kind of undecided as far as you can see?
Well, Gavin, I think at the top of my hits list will be somewhat of a surprise to people, which I would say is Windows 7. Microsoft really sold the heck out of that product, even though it's a year old now, and they're really continuing to sell well and find a way to keep people buying in spite of different competitive pressures. So I'm going to make that my number one hit.
Yeah.
I'd also put on my hit list the Windows Phone 7. After playing with it a bit, I think it's really a pretty good phone, especially because its expectations were pretty low. And I put the Kinect on there as well. Even though I'm not a gamer, I see the appeal, and I think they've got a hit on their hands with that.
Okay.
On my misses list, I definitely put the Kin. No big surprise there, the whole debacle around the Kin. I'd also put the company's continued failure to have an answer to the iPad. In other words, Microsoft really still does not have a credible slate strategy. And I'd also put on my misses list the fact that IE6 and Windows XP still have a very high percentage market share in spite of Microsoft's best attempts to kill them, I should say.
And then your fence straddlers?
On my fence straddlers list, I would put IE9, I put Office Web Apps, and I'd put the executive departures of people like Robbie Bach, Jay Allard, and Ray Ozzie. And we can talk more about why I have that there when we go on.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting list. I think there's a lot of crossover there with my own list. I think definitely on the hits, Kinect, it seems at least in the last few months to be taking off like very well for Microsoft. I saw a story that said in the first 25 days, Kinect had outsold the iPad by 2-1. So clearly they've kind of hit a niche there. Another hit, yes, WinPhone 7 seems to be doing very well so far. All the reviews are positive, but then like you say, the benchmark couldn't have been much lower. And then the other hit, as agreed, Windows 7, you know, a year on, the thing is still selling very well. So it's doing very nicely for Microsoft. The misses list, it's the slate stroke tablet. Where is it? Come on, Microsoft. They've tried to convince us that they've got a strategy, but then, or they've got product coming, quote unquote, before Christmas, but then the reality is that they're not coming out till the next generation of Intel chips next year. Yes, the other miss, the continuation of XP and IE6, which continue to have I think it was at last count, IE6 is about 13% of market share and XP is around half of operating system market share, so they're not going anywhere fast. And the Kin, who'd have thought that? You know, one minute they're telling us it's the future, then the next minute they're killing it. So that was a major embarrassment for an organization like Microsoft. As for the fence sitters, I was interested. Another hit. Sorry, I should have put this in. I was going to go with the loss of the major executives, and I noticed you put Ray Ozzie in as a. I think you said was that a miss? You said, or was that a fence sitter?
Where did I end up putting him? I put him in the fence sitters category.
I'm kind of 50-50. I think I tend towards more the hit. I think they had to get rid of some. So I put it in this context: the guys who left won't be missed. Ozzie is a question mark. I say that was a hit. Those guys going, and I think it's probably going to make Microsoft a stronger organization. I'm not quite sure what Ray did. For all his brilliance, I'm not really quite sure what he contributed. Lots of his defenders will say, well, man, he is a cloud and all that stuff, but I think that was already happening before he got there. Fence straddlers is where I was going from. Went back to hits. Bing, still undecided on that one. I mean, I think we were talking about this earlier. We go to a briefing every 6 months on the latest features in Bing, but boy, does it feel like trench warfare between those companies, you know, like a micro percentage point every few months. It just feels like they're at the foot of a very long hill on that one. the Office web apps, undecided on that one because it's not clear just who's using it and why they're using it and whether it's any good yet. And it's certainly not a Google killer, which is a lot of what people thought. And then this was I don't know where to put this one. It's on my undecided list. So the word patent dispute with i4i, the company that the case that's now gone to the Supreme Court. Who's going to win that one? Is it going to be good for Microsoft? Is it going to be good for i4i? I think it's remarkable that the case has even gone this far. Normally these things are settled in the original trial, or at least as far as the appeals case, but you know, it's got all the way to Supreme Court. Microsoft wants to fight it. So, yeah, that's my list. That's my hits, misses, and also my fence sitters for this year, MJ.
Okay. So should we talk a little more about our choices, of the ones we agreed on and didn't?
Yeah,
so on hits, we both agreed on Windows 7. I mean, that it's just astounding to me that that thing is still selling. And, you know, Windows 7 is going to be out here for a while, if you really believe Microsoft's numbers, which... They haven't actually said when we're going to see Windows 8, but the kind of the common consensus is 2012. There's still a lot of life left in Windows 7, they're hoping. And it's turned out to be a good operating system. Like, I think the fact that nobody's like really clamoring for Service Pack 1. I haven't talked to any customers, consumer or business who are saying we're not even looking at that thing till Service Pack 1 comes around. And that's a big difference, right, from previous versions of Windows.
Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you see Windows 7 as the Service Pack 1 to Vista.
True. I mean, it wasn't a huge update. It definitely was not. But it fixed a lot of the things that people found annoying with Vista. So
yeah.
It did its job in that respect.
Yeah. It's definitely selling well, like say, a year on. And the market's larger as well. It's the kind of the curious aspect is just the strength that still exists and the life still left in XP. I mean, I still go into shops and I still see that XP is running the retail point of sale system. So it's very deeply entrenched. You know, it's still a very slow, very long road that Microsoft has to go on in terms of ripping out XP and getting people to use Windows 7 instead.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, what's become more and more true as time's gone by is when do people upgrade their operating system? When they buy new hardware.
Yeah.
I mean, I almost never hear from somebody going, yeah, we just replaced all the Windows XP and we've just got it running on all our old hardware. Even though we could, that's just not the way people do things anymore. You know, they wait till they're going to upgrade and then they do it all at once. So, yeah, I mean, it's selling well, and Microsoft's hoping it keeps selling well, especially because people are clamoring for more leaks on Windows 8 like happened this past summer. We get to hear a little bit about what Microsoft's planning for Windows 8, but even that didn't really put a damper on Windows 7. People said, okay, they have some interesting things they're talking about for Windows 8, but I'm going to buy Windows 7 anyways because it's here, it's working, people like it.
I mean, the leak on Windows 8 was interesting. It was such an early stage. I think it was more of it was conceptual, kind of like, where is this thing going, rather than actual features. But it seemed to suggest there's an aspect there of putting the cloud and, well, putting more of the desktop in the cloud, kind of more web enabling the desktop and making it more friendly to tablets, which of course is another problem coming back to we were talking about the tablet strategy earlier on and the big miss of the year, the lack of tablet strategy from Microsoft. And it would seem to me if they're waiting on Windows 8, then they're still not really going to be in the market for another 2 years or so. The big hold up, of course, is the chips, which they're still waiting. Was it the Oak Trail?
Oak Trail processor, yep.
Which they're waiting from Intel, which are coming out early next year. And then, I mean, make no mistake, we are seeing tablets already, but I think the chips we'll see from Intel will deliver better performance in a smaller size. And then, of course, the other problem is Windows 7 itself. It's not naturally geared towards the kind of touch, multi-touch input that people have come to expect from tablets, from like the iPad. So it'll be a question of just how far Windows 8 delivers that kind of multi-touch input that we don't actually see in Windows 7. And Windows 7 still remains a traditional laptop and a PC operating system. It's not built from the ground up for tablets that people are touching and poking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when people keep saying, yeah, there are Windows 7 tablets out there, there are Windows 7 slates out there, there are, it's true. But I always come back to the three things I want from a slate. And one is really long battery life, and you don't have that out there in any of these Windows 7 tablets. I mean, they're like 3 hours, 4 hours. The portable form factor. I don't know if you have you lifted one of those Dell Inspiron convertibles?
I tried, yeah.
Yeah, it's heavy. Yeah. And then, you know, you could, okay, they, Microsoft was saying to me, you could just throw it in your purse and go. I'm thinking, man, I would need like to reinforce the strap on my purse before I try to do that.
Yeah, that's a big purse you got. And yeah, the big bags are in, but that's a big purse.
Yeah. So, you know, those two things, and then the touch-centric UI, as you're referring to. You know, Windows 7, yes, it can do touch, but it's made for a keyboard, and that's the difference. iPad is not made for a keyboard.
I do wonder in some ways whether Microsoft's treading water on this strategy. It's really, I got a feeling, judging by some of the comments Steve Ballmer made earlier in the year about how, you know, everything's a PC and tablets are just a facet of the PC market. I do wonder just how committed Microsoft is to the tablet market. I don't feel it sees that its core market is the tablet, so it's probably happy to kind of keep a toe in the water with Windows 7 devices, and just see just how much the demand continues to pan out.
Yeah, I mean, we keep coming back to the same things that we've talked about like through this whole year about the slate and when are they going to have an answer. And, you know, their real answer from that Windows 8 slide deck that we saw is Windows 8. But that's a long time to expect people to wait around for Microsoft to get its act together. Mm. And you know, if they do actually have something that they consider an iPad competitor next year from one or more of its partners, it's got a pretty high bar to meet with an operating system that's not really optimized for the form factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the thing that Apple's done very well is to galvanize. I mean, now Apple's made all that money up until now. Is that, then that's money that Microsoft's failed to make off of tablet devices.
Yeah, I mean, the other problem that we keep coming back to as well is I just lost my train of thought. I was like, wait, I want to say that. Oh, yeah. The other problem that we keep coming back to is the same thing that happened in phones. Mm-hmm. Microsoft first they ridiculed the iPhone. Remember that when Steve Ballmer's like, it's a toy. Huh. Then they were like, okay, we're going to do something to compete with the iPhone. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And, you know, they're just in this, like, delay mode. First the ridicule mode, then the delay mode, and finally they've got to have something to deliver. And I feel like they wait too long. They spend too much time ridiculing things and saying, oh, that's just a niche market. Mm. Nobody really wants to use a tablet. Well, look out there, folks. People are using them. And they're using them in business settings. They're using them at home. They're using them in coffee shops. I mean, Microsoft can't keep saying nobody's doing this.
I believe it's called the five stages of depression, isn't it?
It is. Where's grief?
Denial, isolation, anger, balking, depression, and acceptance. I think we're on stage 5 right now, aren't we? With the...
Yeah. So, yeah, that's why we have slate strategy and lack thereof in our misses category.
So the other interesting thing was the loss of the execs. I mean, I thought that has been interesting because some of them I think we can agree on. And they overlap in Windows Phone 7. The loss of Robbie Back. I mean, there's a man who didn't really, who was really, well, I don't know if it's his fault or whether it's the institution of Microsoft, but something went wrong in Windows Phone, and everyone was busy telling it to Microsoft, and Microsoft, as we say, was in denial, saying, no, it's fine. Back when, and he was the guy in charge of the unit that ran the phone business. And then that unit being entertainment devices, phones was part of that. And then, of course, Stephen Elop, who was the head of business apps, went off to become CEO of Nokia. On the face of it, it seems like a major loss. And again, I think we said throughout the year, what really did Elop do for the franchise apart from maintain it? But I think there was some deadwood clearing. Whether people were jumped or were pushed, that's something we don't know right now. The loss of Ray Ozzie, he's the kind of guy that, there's two facets to this. One is that Microsoft no longer has a chief software officer, or chief software architect rather, which many of traditionalists see as being, you know, my God, what is Microsoft without a software visionary? And the other aspect is the guy who was occupying that office, which was Ozzie, which I always kind of struggled with. I mean, Ray's a nice enough guy, but I always did wonder, is he the right guy for the job? I mean, everyone was like venerating Ray Ozzie, but I mean, I hate to say it, he created Lotus Notes, and then he came up with Groove Networks. What did you do between the two, and what have you done since then? You blogged a couple of times. You know, you weren't one of the kids, Ray. You know, the market's moved on, and Microsoft kind of went with it. So I think because Bill Gates really looked up to Ray Ozzie in some way, so it was kind of manifest destiny that he was accepted in. But anyway, it didn't work out. I do wonder, what does it say about where the company's going forward, MJ? I mean, I think we had this discussion. It's the MBAs who are in charge now, not the geeks.
Right.
And I wonder what you think. I mean, that's got to be the pattern for next year and the year going forward, unless there's another chief geek at the top, unless there's a new Aussie, which doesn't seem going to happen. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's the MBAs who are in charge. I mean, is that a good thing, bad thing?
Yeah, I know. You know, the only reason I have Ray Ozzie in my fence sitters category and not in my hits category like you do is, I think there's two things about Ozzie to keep in mind. I agree with you, he's the wrong guy for the job. If they wanted a chief software architect in the mold of Bill Gates, he was the wrong guy. Because he didn't like to speak in public. He didn't want to be out there on the circuit. He liked to work behind the scenes. And that's all fine and good, except they didn't have somebody who was their like chief geek out in the world. And that was a big loss for them. But the reason I put Ozzie in the fence sitters is I think the one thing he did do from all accounts is he did act internally as kind of the cross-silo unifier. Like he got a lot of teams who typically didn't talk to each other to talk to each other. And he, I think, did have a view inside of what Microsoft was doing on a whole bunch of different technical fronts and what pieces would fit with what.
Yeah.
And my question is, okay, if you don't replace him, who is that guy or who's doing that function? Because I think that function is necessary. You might not need a public face of a chief software architect, but you need somebody who knows what's going on. And who is that person now at Microsoft? I don't know who that is.
That makes me worried
for them.
I see what you're saying. I do kind of wonder, too. I mean, they've got different units, and they kind of it's more kind of an ethos they have, a belief in Windows rather than an organization ability to actually put it all together. I was going to raise this point earlier. I wonder if this, where is Steven Sinofsky's star right now? Because if anyone can unify stuff, it seems to be he's the man who gets things done. I mean, he's obviously got, you know, separate issues, but he put out Windows 7, and then it seems to be things. I mean, we'll come on to this in a second, but there seems to be the big fight inside Microsoft over HTML5 versus Silverlight, and it seems like HTML5 won that battle by virtue of the fact, I would say, because it all comes down to the browser, which is in his business unit. So I feel like he's possibly got the pull right now.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, by all accounts, wants to have the pull and is somebody who really, his star is high at Microsoft, and I think he would like to take advantage of that and have more control over more different teams if he can do that. Going back to the Aussie thing, though, the part that made me not put it in the hits or the misses category also, in addition to that whole software architect role and do they need somebody like that, is when you do look at the things Ozzie cared about and Ozzie was very involved with, like a lot of them didn't pan out the way people thought they would or kind of become the next big thing for the company, which was what a lot of people thought he was in charge of finding. Like, what's our next big thing? You know, the thing I keep coming back to is Live Mesh. And if you remember, like when he first joined Microsoft, that was one of his pet projects. And everybody was like, wow, Live Mesh, that's the future. And that's going to supplant Windows someday. And there's going to be a Live Mesh operating system and a Live Mesh framework. And when it came out this year in final form, you look at what came out, it was kind of like who cares? I mean, it was like not even as good as Dropbox by any stretch. And it just doesn't even support phones. So there were just a lot of things that they took out at the last minute. And people were like, wow, now I don't even care about it anymore.
Well, that's why it's kind of he tends to go in my hits column. Because of things like that. It was a great promise. But then the essence of the company remains Windows PC. So was he undone by the corporate inertia of the large organization, the one man against the corporation, you know, and the corporation wins just because of the force of inertia? Like, it's great, we'll have a Live Mesh operating system, but hey, we've also got the Windows operating system, and that's where the biz dev is going to be, you know?
Right.
Well, I know we kind of just want to tackle one other thing that was on our kind of fence thrillers I thought was interesting, was the Office web apps. You had some strong hill views on that, I believe, didn't you, about why it's... Because I've got it in the maybes, you've got it in the misses. But that was one of the most biggest anticipated things the year from them, wasn't it? Because it was going to be the first time that Office, the $14 billion franchise, was going to go online, enabled through the web, you know, be like, you know, Google Apps. And suddenly, you know, it'd be like Google versus Microsoft in the Office productivity department. And then with also a big question mark over what it means for the desktop business. Take it from there, MJ.
Yeah. I kept going back and forth between putting Office web apps in my misses or my fence sitters, because the idea of Office web apps sounds good, right? It's like, here's how Microsoft cannot cannibalize its Office business, but still give people a way to do some of the things they can do with Google Docs. Like you can view documents on different platforms and browsers. And I mean, the concept of it sounds good. Then I tried to use it. I've tried it through Hotmail, and I've tried it with my SkyDrive account, sharing documents and all that. And I can tell you, it's not easy. It's not easy to figure out how it works. Microsoft's documentation of it has been something that's a work in progress. They're always updating. Well, now you can print. You couldn't print before, but now you can. And it's hard to keep up with, like, okay, can I do this or can't I? You know, like, I tried to use Office web apps access on the Windows Phone 7 loaner unit that I had, and I just gave up. I was like, okay, I see how you can use OneNote, and I can't see how you use Word. Yeah. So I think it's something they're going to be fleshing out further as things go along. But unless you're somebody who's using the paid business version and you're used to using something as complex as SharePoint in your organization, you're going to find it a little bit challenging, to say the least, to actually take advantage of Office web apps.
I'm confused, because I've spoken to Microsoft as well about how you can actually get Office web apps, and it's still not entirely clear. I mean, it's part of you need an Office 2010 license, but then except for the times when you don't, you need a SharePoint license.
Right. Come on. Yeah. And then you can get at it through Hotmail and SkyDrive, or maybe just SkyDrive, or maybe just Hotmail. It's like, okay, all I know is I can't figure out how to share a document, and isn't that the whole point of the thing?
And I don't, you know, the micro features that we keep getting released, like now we can print, now we can do this. It's like, well, you know, thanks. I'm losing interest in this thing, because it was supposed to be like the all-encompassing Office suite. But then they will justify it by saying, well, it's a work in progress, it's a big piece of thing we're doing. But then what happened to our tech companies? Why can't they deliver big pieces of technology anymore? Why has it got to be the incremental update? I mean, if these people can't do it, what happened to our tech companies supposed to deliver a big piece of like service or software, you know, and they're the guys that are saying, hey, we it's a complicated thing, we can't do it all in one go. I mean, come on, we're talking like making documents, we're talking about sharing documents, and we're talking about printing documents. Surely that can't be a tall order for you guys. Now, I tell you what the problem is. It's the internal discussions that go on inside the companies about what do we want to give the reusers for free, because it'll damage our regular paying business. That's the kind of tension I believe that Microsoft still hasn't reconciled and is going to struggle with in 2011 and forward as well.
Yeah, I mean, Office web apps to me was the big feature of Office 2010. I mean, there were a lot of other more incremental features, and you know, conversation view and Outlook and that kind of thing. But to me, if you said why would I upgrade to Office 2010, I would have said to get access to Office web apps. But then when you actually try to make these things work inside your organization and across platforms and across browsers, it's not that easy. And you know, it's hard to say how much of that is by design, right? Like, did they want to make it not that easy so people wouldn't just suddenly dump, you know, the idea of having a client-based Office? You know, there's a lot of what ifs, and I'm going to be really curious to see the next version of Office web apps, or maybe Microsoft won't actually go that way, and it'll kind of take a different approach by the time Office 15 comes. But right now, I'd say Office web apps is not a killer feature and not a reason to upgrade to Office 2010, in my view.
Yeah, I think it's definitely not proved the Google killer that people in the Valley thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Well, Let's just circle back. That's the kind of the list. There was a couple other topics I thought it was worth digging into for the year.
Let's talk about IE9. We forgot to talk about
that. Yes. Let's buckle that in with Microsoft's internet strategy, because Microsoft's history for the last 20 years at least has been the struggle between the desktop versus the internet, you know, and how much it relinquishes its desktop, you know, like empire to the internet and makes money out of that. This year, Internet Explorer 9 was the big story, even though it's not actually, it feels like it's here already, but it hasn't actually launched, it's still in beta. So that's in one corner. Excuse me. Then in the other corner, we've got Silverlight Media Player, which was the golden child up until late this year. When I know you managed to speak to Bob Muglia, who is the Microsoft president running the division that is home to that piece of software. And then
maybe last conversation with Bob.
Yeah, I must thank you for that. All the doors are shut now. the internet strategy, 2010, you know, transition year for Microsoft, discussed, but some things don't change. Now we've got IE9, and then we've got Silverlight, and we've got HTML, and HTML seems to have come on like a storm in the last few months at least because of its marriage to IE9. Silverlight has been kind of sidelined slightly. So MJ, let's start with IE9. You had some strong feelings about that. There's been a lot of people saying it's a great version of the browser. You know, people very much wow by the HTML, level of HTML support in it. What are your views on the IE9 versus, let's say, IE8?
Yeah, so I think the idea of IE9 is awesome. Like the idea that Microsoft's really finally totally embracing standards, and not just embracing them, but like kind of leading on them, right? Like they've shown all these benchmarks, like we're the most HTML5 compliant browser. You know, whether you believe that or not. Okay. But I think that's all well and good. And if you hit a lot of websites when you're browsing that are HTML5 enabled, it works really great for you and you're really wowed by that. I happen to I'm using the beta. I've been using it for a while. I go to a lot of websites that not only are not HTML5 enabled, but they break with IE9. So I've kind of had to keep dropping the beta when it gets really annoying. Microsoft recently did an update to the beta that sort of fixed some stuff, but not really. My IE9 beta runs really slow, and I'm running it on a 64-bit Windows 7 machine. So I keep wondering, like, wow, is it me or is it everybody else? You know, it's like, why does everybody think this is so amazing other than the fact that conceptually it's a great idea that they're embracing standards? If the browser experience actually is worse. So that's why I put them, IE9, in the fence sitter category. It's like Microsoft needs to embrace HTML5 if it wants to have a true cross-platform play runtime-wise. You know, that originally was supposed to be Silverlight's role in the world. Now that's the browser with HTML5 enablement. But if people suddenly go to all these websites that aren't working right, you click the compatibility button and it's still not working right. Like the one that most annoys me is the new Twitter on IE9. I don't know if you've tried that.
No.
Bad experience. And, you know, okay, then we come to the question, whose fault is it? Is it Twitter's fault or is it Microsoft's fault? Because it's a little bit of both, right? It's like Microsoft's fault maybe that it's making such a huge leap forward with new functionality. Twitter's fault because they've obviously optimized for an older version of IE and they're not really upgrading for IE9 yet because it's not out. Mm-hmm. So if you try to use the new Twitter with IE9, not a very happy experience.
They would probably say, well, you're using a beta version of the software. You're just too ahead of the curve. I'm not defending them there, but when is this thing about this? So the next version is going to be due what? I guess we're talking, they're going to plan a consumer beta. Have they said that much this year? Because I know they've done
They said one of the next releases is going to be the release candidate. Like, they're almost done.
Oh, so they're done.
They're done. Like, I think we're going to see the final IE9 probably at MIX next year, which will be April.
I think we definitely will.
So it's done. I mean, it's not like there's going to go through a whole bunch more changes or, they're going to be adding or taking away a lot more features. It's pretty much done. So I'm interested to see when a greater audience of people who are not technical enthusiasts, who don't always know how to tweak things to make them work, are suddenly going to have IE9 and they're going to be like, wow, it breaks everything, or everything breaks, whichever way you want to phrase that, you know?
Well, let's take a step back from that, and then let's talk briefly about HTML5 and Silverlight, because that was an interesting thing. So you got to speak to Bob Muglia, and he said how the strategy has changed around Silverlight. And then they recently in December, they had that whole Silverlight Firestarter Day with Scott Guthrie was talking about the future strategy. And I've got to say, there was a bit of more of the same. I mean, Microsoft's trying to say that their commitment to Silverlight hasn't decreased, but at PDC in late 2010, we did have the fact that Bob Muglia called Silverlight 5 now a development platform for Windows Phone 7, and Steve Ballmer bounded on stage and started saying how HTML was the way all interfaces would talk on the web, whereas during the last 3 years, Silverlight was the kind of the interface technology from Microsoft. So I do kind of, it seems to me, and I think any sane observer of the company can see, has been a clear shift in strategy, and I wonder where that has come from. It seems to me that the HTML, and there was a little, if you remember over the summer, there was a little spat, a few blogs and tweets leaked out from Microsoft talking, like people were boosting either HTML or they were boosting Silverlight. It seems something, in the context of why is this now happening, it was clear there was a political disagreement or a turf war inside Microsoft over which these two would be the Microsoft's standard bearer technologies when it comes to running general purpose web apps. It seems, coming back to your point on IE9, it seems that HTML5 has won, and Silverlight is back in the box of being something to build interfaces online of business applications, which is not necessarily a sexy future. I mean, there's a lot of money in that. Let's not get it wrong, but it's not going to set the internet alight. And I agree, it was the right move to do. I mean, Microsoft had to get with HTML5. Silverlight was not an open product, but it will work with it. And one of the lesser reported aspects of the Silverlight roadmap for 2011 was the use of actually sucking in HTML5, HTML code rather, and running web apps in kind of a trusted applications mode, which says to me they're kind of blending the desktop more with the internet. And we can look forward and say maybe that's where Windows 8 is going as well, so you get more of kind of an Adobe Air style runtime environment. So there's definitely been a shift, it seems to me. HTML5 kind of finished on the high note, but it just seems to me the Microsoft's internet strategy as ever is in 2010 as true as it was in 1999 maybe, and as true as it probably will be in 2011, it's still a work in progress. It still can't quite decide where to put all its chips.
Yeah, I think the key thing to remember when we're talking about what did Microsoft change or do differently in 2010 around the web strategy is when they said the role of Silverlight has changed and their strategy has shifted, what they just didn't state out plainly, in my view, but they could have, was Silverlight is not our cross-platform play anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what changed. They weren't backing away from Silverlight as a development platform. In fact, they're putting even more eggs in that basket. Like they're really turning Silverlight into the superset of WPF, right?
Yeah.
Windows Presentation Foundation.
There's more comm support now as well, and they're using a lot more of the Visual Basic tie-in as well. It's definitely losing that cross-platform aspect they used to have.
Yeah. And part of it is them just bowing to the reality that people like Apple can block them from having Silverlight on iOS.
Yeah.
And they have blocked them, it seems. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think Microsoft already would have Silverlight running on the iPad because it would give them a leg up over Flash, right? But, they had to bow to reality, and they did. And that's, I think, what's making this confusion. They don't want to come out and say, you know what, guys? We're not going to make this be the cross-platform runtime anymore.
Yeah.
Like, the fact they still don't have Silverlight available on Android.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember, they promised that. What was it, a year and a half ago or so? Yeah. They even said it was coming in beta. Like, they were right on the verge of doing it, and then it just never happened. So I think we're just seeing them bow to reality, but the very enthusiastic Silverlight development community takes anything you question about Silverlight as you saying Silverlight is dead, which I definitely don't think Silverlight is dead. I think Silverlight's future as the cross-platform runtime is dead, and HTML5 won. And the most interesting thing that I'm curious about and wondering about is how is Microsoft going to have an app store going forward, or multiple app stores that are that are going to serve a lot of different needs. Like, how are you going to have an app store where you can have a client, a Windows client version of an app right next to something like Angry Birds, right? And people making informed choices about what they want to run on which platform, and do they need to know it's HTML5? Do they not need to know? You know, can a WPF app be running alongside a Silverlight app? You know, like, I think there's a lot of mix and match questions that are unsettled because of this shift in strategy. And I think we're not really going to know too much more about it until we start hearing more about Windows 8 App Store and what they're planning there.
I think definitely the future is yet to be told.
Yeah.
Well, MJ, what do we think in terms of any big predictions for looking ahead for next year? Obviously, we've got a large kind of like stable of options, haven't we, MJ? We've got, like, you know, browsers, operating system services, Azure Cloud, which we haven't talked about, you know, Office web apps, more executive departures, you know, executive hires maybe, stuff we haven't considered. What do you think, what's your top predictions maybe for Microsoft in 2011?
Two things I'm going to watch for in 2011. One is, I think we are going to see the final version of IE9 and probably around Mix, which is April 2011. So that's one of my predictions. I also think we're going to see a first public beta of Windows 8 by the time of fall 2011. I think maybe there'll be a leak before that about Windows 8, but you know, like a milestone build or something, internal build. But I think that's when we're really going to get a better sense of what Windows 8 is going to look like and how some of these things that we just talked about with Silverlight and the App Store and HTML are going to all come into play or not around the unified vision of a marketplace or multiple marketplaces.
Okay. Well, I'd say I'd look forward to a beta of Silverlight 5, and I'm with you. I think Mix is probably going to be the show where we see that. I was going to go with a major update to Windows Phone 7, but it just struck me. I think the tablet aspect is interesting. I think it's fair to say there's going to be the new Intel chips coming out next year, but the big unknown is going to be what happens to the Windows tablets. And I think my prediction is going to be that the iPad will continue to sell and sell well, and people will probably prefer that. And while there could easily be a good showing of Windows 7 and other Windows tablets out there, it's still going to be, Microsoft's still going to be on the back foot on this one, I think, at least in terms of a cool consumer brand aspect, if not on a business revenue perspective.
Yeah, I think the only way that isn't going to happen is if Microsoft suddenly does a surprise move and does a Microsoft slate.
Yeah.
You know, like how they did with the Xbox and the Kin. I mean, it'll be like if they suddenly said, you know what, we're tired of waiting for the OEMs to get their act together, let's just do a slate.
Yeah,
I don't think that's I don't think that's really highly probable, but that would be the one like super surprise move that could change the slate problem for me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's been a long year. We've had the Steve Ballmer Mood Index all 12 months this year, or maybe not, maybe 11 months this year. How would Steve finish the year out, do you think? Is he frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, or is he monkey boy, do you think?
I think he's wavering between all business and, what was the next one? Up.
Up is victorious, down is intense.
Victorious. I think between all business and victorious. And the reason I say that is, I think their consumer products are selling really well this holiday season, making him feel victorious. But their stock price is still stuck where it's been for 10, 20 years or whatever. So that makes it a little less sweet, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
What do you think?
I go with all business. I mean, it's been an all business year for Steve. I mean, if we go with this theme that it's been a kind of a transition year for Microsoft, he's had to make some tough decisions. I think he's moved through his five stages of denial or five stages of depression. He's recognized as a problem and he's probably dealing with that. Is he victorious? Yeah, I'd say the consumer stuff's going pretty well. It seems to be going well. Connect is a personal hobby of his. He seems to like that. Windows Phone 7. He doesn't strike me as a passionate speaker about it when it comes to it. When we saw the Windows Phone 7 launch, he was kind of, seemed more like he was being fed the lines on that one rather than actually believing them. So victorious. Yeah, possibly, if not a committed believer in the passion of the phone. All business to victorious is probably a good assessment, I think.
Yeah. He's secretly running his iPhone in the background somewhere.
He's got an iPad. We know it.
Just for research purposes.
There's no shame. Come on. Well, that's it for this year, I think, MJ. this has been Microbyte for 2010, and we'll see you again in 2011 for more Microbyte-age of Microsoft. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet.
And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.